Hello, Ramblers and Gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Two interviews today off the top. First ballot RNG Hall of Famer Raheem Palmer is back. Raheem, he's just, you know, destroying it, killing it, kicking butt and taking names over the Ringer. So proud of our guy. He also recently got into a bit of a disagreement with Kevin Durant. So we'll cover that, of course, the NBA Finals, and also which guys may be headed to different teams this offseason as well, this NBA offseason. I think it's going to be a really active one. Then Bill Spiros is back. Bill's a senior betting analyst over at bookies.com. He's also a columnist for the Boston Herald. We'll talk Belmont Stakes with Bill and whether Rich Strike can pull off another shocker after his 80-1 Derby win. Also a little golf. Boy, oh boy, have we had a lot of golf news of late. So got to cover that. Anywho, let's get things going with my friend and yours, Raheem Palmer. Welcome back, my man. How are you?
Life is good. I can't complain. I'm really in a good space. You know, it's summer, so it's time to get out there and just, you know, enjoy life. And then we got the NBA Finals. So, I mean, we got a good series between two of the best teams in the league. We got Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors. We got Jason Tatum. So I've been excited.
And you've been busy too. First of all, my apologies. I sound like hot garbage today. I got it. It's not COVID. I went to the doctor just to be sure. I was at the beach last weekend with a bunch of families and a bunch of little kids with snotty noses, including my own. And I think I caught like a little summer cold from them, but I did. I was so paranoid because I started feeling just like a little sniffly at the very, very end. And I was like, oh my God, what if I gave COVID to somebody? Thankfully, I do not have COVID, little summer cold. So first of all, for you, for the listeners, that's why I sound like garbage, but I'm feeling better. And then number two, you, sir, you've been a very busy guy. Let's walk through why. Number one, you now work for The Ringer and you're on an awesome podcast, The Ringer Gambling Show, with our buddy Joe House. I've loved listening to it. You guys are killing it. And then this was kind of amazing. You got into a little Twitter spat, shall we say, with a certain future Hall of Famer. How you doing after that one, man?
I mean, it was funny. I didn't think he would respond, but I guess I threw the Jay-Z lyric in there and then I posted some evidence. And, you know, it was funny to me because, you know, Kevin Durant's probably one of the greatest players to ever play a game. And he felt need to like justify his basketball talent to me. Like he was saying stuff like, I'm a good player, I'm an all-star. And it's like, dude, we know you're great, but you don't realize that you put yourself in a position where you're always going to get this criticism because you joined a 73-win team after they knocked you out the playoffs. And, you know, when you look at Kevin Durant's playoff stats, I love Kevin Durant to death, but you look at his years in OKC and then you compare him to his years in Golden State, it's like night and day. I mean, this guy became basically the greatest small forward of all time playing next to Steph Curry. And granted, he did help that team out, but look, I mean, Tyronn Lue said it in the NBA Finals when they were like planning for them. Steph Curry was the head of the snake. They would double and trap Steph Curry and let Kevin Durant go one-on-one, which is something that he never had to deal with his entire career. And you saw this year, he had to deal with those same doubles that Steph Curry had to deal with, and it's not the same result. So that's the only point I was trying to make to Kev, and Kev just wasn't trying to hear it.
All right, so let me just walk back through this whole thing in case any of the listeners don't know. Basically, Ra, I think it's fair to say, has had some Kevin Durant takes for quite some time. Nothing new. We've even talked about him on this podcast. And then last week, a clip from Draymond Green's podcast kind of blows up. Basically, Draymond says, and I'm paraphrasing here, but that even though KD has a finals MVP and Steph Curry doesn't, that Curry actually got way more attention from opposing defenses in those finals. And basically that Steph has a bigger impact on the game and on the championships, regardless of what the stat sheet may have looked like afterwards. KD then tweets that that is false in his view. Then Ra, you post a video showing KD just cruising down the lane, pretty much unimpeded in the 2017 finals against the Cavs. largely because the defense, you can see in the clips, focused on Curry. And then you also so eloquently, as you pointed out, quoted Jay-Z. I believe this was from a diss track of Nas. He says, "You was a ballerina. I got your pictures. I seen you." KD fires back, says, "You seen me cooking?" You tell him, and I love this, you tell him he definitely wasn't playing on all Madden mode next to Curry, is what you said. and then it just keeps going from there. I do want to say this, Rod. Like, let me put it like this. There are lots of people out there in the media world who will say stuff just for the purpose of trying to get someone's reaction, someone who's a big star like Kevin Durant, a clout chasing, as the kids say.
Yeah.
I know you pretty well. We talk on the pods, we talk off the pods. You are not that guy. You have strong convictions. You will voice them publicly. However, I know you. I think it's fair to say you didn't put this tweet out there because you were hoping that KD would respond. He just so happened to respond.
Yeah. And, you know, I gave him a compliment, and I think he took it like I was just trying to kind of butter him up to throw a diss and sneak this. And it's like, no, it's like, look, you can be great, but still, you know, have flaws and things that you do that put you in a negative light. And that's all I was trying to say to Kevin Durant. And it's just, I don't think he was necessarily getting it. So it's so funny. I actually kind of shot my shot and he didn't respond to this. I was like, look, if you want to talk this out like men, you could jump on a podcast. But he didn't respond. But
That was my next question. No DMs or anything like that between you, just what we all saw public.
No DMs. But I think one day I'm going to speak into existence. I'm going to get a Kevin Durant interview at some point.
I cannot wait. I co-signed that one. All right. Well, interestingly, this finals is making your side of the argument look pretty good. Let's talk about that. The pod's going to go live Wednesday morning. We're recording it as we always do on Tuesday. Game 3 is Wednesday night. As of now, series is tied 1-1. FanDuel, last I checked, has the Warriors listed as -115 favorites for the series. The C's are -105. And as for Game 3 specifically, they've got the Celtics favored by 3.5 in Boston. Rod, generally speaking, what's your take on what we've seen so far?
Whoa, this is just a really interesting series. I think the biggest thing that we're seeing right now is that these are two equally matched teams. I mean, when you look at the point total for the series, you got the Golden State Warriors 215, Boston Celtics 208. I think the biggest thing that we've seen is that I think the Celtics are the better team, but they just turn the ball over so much. And I think that's the thing that's always going to decide these games is just turnovers. And it's just, I mean, we've seen the Golden State Warriors, they turned the ball over a ton in game one, and then the Celtics come back and they have 19 turnovers in game two. I mean, the 19 turnovers were, I mean, the Golden State Warriors scored 33 points over 19 turnovers, which is the second most in like 25 years in NBA finals history. So I just think I thought the Celtics were kind of live to win game two, but I mean, you look at the trends. Top three seeds that win game one, I mean, that lose game one, they come back firing. I think they, after game two, it's, what was it, 31-17. So you kind of knew that the Warriors were going to win that game, but I just think they kind of caught a raw deal with some of the officiating. You know, Draymond Green was just allowed to play as physical as he wanted. He really did. He probably should have been thrown out. I mean, I was glad he didn't, but it just felt like the Celtics didn't really play their best game. All those turnovers. And then also they struggled to shoot on twos. But I think going forward, this is going to be a longer series. I just think I like the Celtics for game three. I mean, my model actually puts it at 3.5. So I think they have the edge going forward.
You have a series pick at this point?
I'm not willing to jump on the series. I think it's priced pretty well, but I'm gonna take it at minus. I'm gonna take the game three. I mean, right now the series price is pretty much even. You got -110, -115 on both sides. So I'm chilling on the series. But I was a little frustrated because I like the Warriors to win game one, and then I was gonna come back and take the Celtics at a better number, hoping I can get like almost 2-1. And it turns out the early number before the series, like +140 or something on the Celtics, was the best number that you could find. So I was a little frustrated about that.
I was hoping to do the same thing. I thought you made an interesting point the other day about how this may actually be the first time the Warriors have ever had the best player in a finals series. And that sounds crazy because they've won three championships. But here are their finals appearances. 2015, 16, 17, 18, all against the Cavs and LeBron. 2019, they play the Raptors and Kawhi. Now, 2022, I think most people probably, if we go back a week, would have said Tatum was at least playing the best coming into this. But clearly, in these two games we've seen so far, the best player, it's been Curry.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And I just think, you know, look, Steph Curry is probably the most unique superstar we've ever seen in the history of the game, because he's a guy of a smaller stature. And when you look at guards, like, the NBA is a big man's league. And if you go back all throughout history, I mean, go back to the 70s, it's normally a bigger center or a wing player who is the best player on a championship team. Until you get to Michael's Bulls, you don't really see too many guards who are the best player. And then even Michael was, you know, 6'6 or something, you know, 6'6, 200 something pounds. Steph Curry is 6'3. So you always see with these smaller guards, and I mean, you could pick a name out of a hat, whether it be Chris Paul, whether it be Kyle Lowry, whether it be Damian Lillard, these Allen Iverson, their efficiency drops a ton in the playoffs. But I think the thing that Steph Curry has, which kind of differentiates himself from the rest of those little guards, is that he's the greatest three-point shooter of all time. You have to start guarding this guy at half court. And his mere presence on the floor, he's almost like a perimeter version of Shaq in terms of his gravity. So you look at Andre Iguodala, he basically won an MVP because he got so many open shots because of Steph Curry. And Steph Curry, at the same time, can still give you, what is he averaging for this series? 31 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. So it's just, I mean, he's dangerous. So, and you look at some of those other finals, the way Steph Curry is typically guarded is that they kind of trap him and get the ball out of his hands and let the rest of the team go 4-on-5, not allowing Steph to beat him. So he doesn't always have those numbers that you expect from a finals MVP, despite having a finals MVP like impact. So, you know, I mean, when you look at the other side of the ball, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, I mean, he came up big in game one, but he struggles to dribble. He's a turnover machine. And you look at Jason Tatum, I love him to death, but, you know, I had a tweet kind of calling him Paul George a couple years ago. And this was right after Paul George was kind of made a meme after the bubble, after he was struggling. And people were offended by it. But I look at Jason Tatum as a guy who he's a big, big guard, big wing, but he's not explosive. He's not a guy who can totally explode to the rim like a LeBron James. He doesn't have the best mid-range jump shot. He tends to take very difficult shots, almost like a Kobe Bryant, but he doesn't make them at the Kobe type level. So you'll see those games, like in game one, where he can't make anything. And then his playmaking, it's improved, but it's still not where it needs to be. Now, I thought game one, where he was just 3 for 17 from the field, I thought he played a good game despite not shooting very well. He had 13 assists. But you look at game two, he scored, but to me, he played a worse game. He was forcing it. So it's just the Warriors clearly have the best player in the series. And I mean, I weigh that pretty heavily. I mean, obviously, the Warriors were able to win finals despite not having the best player because they were the best team. But, you know, in a matchup between two evenly matched teams, that could swing things. But I still like the Celtics in this series.
You do. Okay. You mentioned also liking the Celtics in game three. Any other bets that you think listeners should be thinking about? Angles, whatever?
There's definitely some interesting angles. Like, I mean, one of the things that stands out to me is that Robert Williams is really, really banged up. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he could stay on the floor with how banged up he is. In addition, when you look at the lineups with Robert Williams in it, they're getting outscored by almost 30 points per one to possession. Actually, it's 23 points per one of the possessions that starting lineup with Robert Williams on the floor. So I think the Celtics are going to have to go small. So I'm kind of looking at some point totals under on Robert Williams. I think you can get some good value on that. I think you're going to see some sharp money on the under. I think you got like 55% of the public all on the over right now. And you got, I think, more of the sharper money. I think you got 70% of the money on the under. So I can see that hitting. I'm not going to be playing that, but I'm definitely going to be playing the Celtics. I'm definitely going to be looking for some Robert Williams unders. I think Derek Williams, he's still kind of the role player that you want to look towards for the Celtics as far as point totals. His point total is up to like 11 and a half, but he has a 23% usage rate, which is third among all Celtics behind Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. So those are some of the ones that I'm looking at. One fact I found interesting is that the Celtics, when Jason Tatum has five or more assists, they're 12-2. When he has four or less assists, they're 1-5 in this postseason. So I think a Tatum assist prop is correlated with a Celtics win. So maybe you could parlay those, but I'm not big on parlays.
What do you make of these third quarters we've seen so far? I think I saw a stat, and forgive me if I get this wrong, because I'm just doing it off the top of my head. I'm just thinking about this now. But I think in these first two games, Golden State has outscored Boston by something like 35 points in third quarter alone.
Yeah, 73-38 in the third quarter in this series.
Nuts. It's nuts.
Yeah. When you look at the Celtics in the playoffs, they're 7.6 points per one of possessions. They're being outscored by 7.6 points per possessions in the third quarter. That's 10th among all playoff teams. They have a 16.6% turnover rate in the third quarter. So I don't know what it is. For whatever reason, they're not really prepared in the third quarter. But there's one caveat to that. And I think, you know, it might, because this is going to get overblown going into game three. The Celtics third quarter net rating at home is much better than it is on the road. So if you look at the home road splits, their net rating at home is a positive 7.9. Offensive rating of 113, defensive rating of 105. If you look on the road, it's minus 19.7. So offensive rating of 98, defensive rating of 117. But you got to look. I mean, the playoffs are a small sample size. What happened in the third quarter of game one against Miami? They got blown up. They were coming off the game seven. What happened in the third quarter of game two? Game one against the Warriors. You know, they're coming off the game seven. So it's just like there's those two big moments kind of changed everything.
Yeah, that's fair. So yeah, would you maybe bet against this trend in game three since the Celtics are back home and a lot of people are likely going to want to bet against them in the second half?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think you would. I think you can even dive deeper into that. When you look at the Warriors third quarter, at home, they have a positive 26.7 net rating. Offensive rating of 128, defensive rating of 101. When you look on the road, they have a negative 17.2 net rating. So the Warriors third quarter on the road, they're not that great. They're not what they are at home. So I just think when you look at the Warriors in the postseason, they're 3-4 on the road this year. So this is a different Warriors team at home versus on the road.
I like that.
Now, yeah, so it's just like, I mean, look, a lot of people are going to say, oh, yeah, the Celtics are 5-4 at home this year. But they have a net rating of a positive 6.7. So when they win big. They just have these moments because they don't have a true point guard that they turn the ball over, and then they're prone to some bad shooting nights.
Last random one that I'm just throwing out off the top of my head because I'm thinking about it now. Let's say the Celtics win it all. Given what we've seen in the first two games, who do you think is most likely to be finals MVP?
Oh, this is a hard one.
It's a hard one, right? Because Tatum hasn't, I mean, he hasn't looked great. Not like he had earlier in the playoffs.
I mean, like, you got to be looking to Jaylen Brown. But, I mean, if not, look, if the Celtics are going to win this series, it might be because of Al Horford. They may have to go small with him at center and, you know, kind of see what happens. I mean, he came up big in game one, but I mean,
the game two, he was at least, you know, numbers wise, he was like non-existent. After a game, he was like, and again, I'm doing this off the top of my head. I texted a bunch of buddies about this earlier this week. Al Horford was like 120-1 to win finals MVP before the series. And then he shot all the way down. It was like, I forget what the number was. It was like a crazy drop in his odds heading into game two. And I haven't looked at it going into game three, but major swings in that market. Yeah.
Yeah. He's up to 60. He's up to 6,500 right now.
Crazy. Crazy. I mean, you could have gotten a 120-1 ticket coming out of the gate. I don't know. Anyway, just food for thought. Let's do a little general NBA before I let you go. And I want to talk about the Ringer too at the end of this one. The offseason, it's about to heat up. Rob, I'm thinking this could be a really active one. A few guys who could be on the move, according to various reports and whatever else. Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Kyrie, DeAndre Ayton, Ben Simmons, Julius Randle, Zach LaVine. I guess you could throw Beal and Russ in there. I don't personally think either one of them's moving, but you never know. Any guesses as to where any of those guys end up? You can pick them off if you want them, and if not, you can leave them. It's all good.
I think Kyrie's going to stay just because of his friendship with Kevin Durant. I know they're sick of Kyrie in Brooklyn right now, and at some point you got to kind of take a stand. But I still think Kevin Durant has a lot of power, because if they let Kyrie go, I think he's good. He's wants to leave. They're kind of stuck with him. You make your bed when you get in the bed with certain superstars. I think Donovan Mitchell, I could see him anywhere. I'm gonna be honest with you. I mean, with Quinn Snyder leaving, I think they might just blow this whole thing up. I mean, obviously the first place you're gonna hear about as far as Donovan Mitchell is New York. That wouldn't surprise me. With Rudy Gobert, I mean, I think you're gonna have teams lining up for Rudy Gobert. I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. It wouldn't surprise me if Rudy Gobert went to Chicago. There were some rumors about that today. It wouldn't surprise me if the Warriors traded for Rudy Gobert.
The Warriors?
Yeah, it would not surprise me. I mean, they still got Wiseman. Who knows if they're going to be able to, you know, keep Wiggins. It would not surprise me if they tried to, you know, put together a package. I mean, they're always a team who's looking to get better. Westbrook, I think they're kind of – the Lakers are stuck with Westbrook unless they decide to give up some picks, which, you know, they don't really have many of. So it's just like they're kind of going to have to kind of give up an asset. So I think they're going to start the season with Westbrook, and then he'll probably be gone eventually. DeAndre Ayton, that's a tough one. I mean, they didn't pay him, so he's going to be the most like sought after restricted free agent on the market. I think, you know, I think Dallas right now, they need a center. So I could easily see them going after Gobert or Ayton. Like, they need an inside presence. We saw that in the Warriors series. They got absolutely dominated on the boards. Julius Randle. Wow, I haven't thought about him in months. Because of the Knicks were out of the playoff picture.
I think he's going somewhere. I don't see him in New York next year.
Yeah, the season was a mess, and I think last season was a little bit of fluke. Zach LaVine. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think I heard some rumors about Bill that they were trying to offer him the Supermax.
Bulls were?
No, the Wizards, as far as Bill.
Oh, Bill. My bad. I got you. I absolutely think that's going to happen. I mean, zero inside information on that, but that's what I think is going to happen.
I mean, I think it's great. Honestly, I think the Supermax has really hurt these NBA teams, because you're giving a guy like most of your cap, and like, I love Bradley Beal to death, but he's not a guy who's like, he could barely take his team to the playoffs by himself.
So you sound like your buddy Joe House, man. We had him on, noted Wizards fan, and he was like, no, he was like, we cannot give Beal the Supermax. He was like, there's nothing that stops an NBA team in their tracks, like giving somebody who doesn't deserve a Supermax. That was his take.
It's the correct take. It's definitely the correct take.
So this was interesting. I got an email from my bookie about some of this. It's an offshore book. I don't bet with them. Take all this for what you will, but they do have odds prices listed for where some of these guys will end up. They said Donovan Mitchell is a -130 favorite to stay in Utah. From there, the favorites in order are Knicks +350, Spurs 4-1, Thunder 5-1, Heat 6-1. I thought this was interesting. They've got Gobert as even money to end up on the Raptors, and Utah as +150 to keep him. Yeah. So they say it's actually more likely that Gobert ends up in Toronto than in Utah. And one other one that I thought was kind of interesting is Ben, and it's mostly because the Wizards mentioned here, Ben Simmons, your boy Benjamin, -400 to stay with Brooklyn. He's +350 to go to the Rockets, and then the Clippers, and they've got the Wiz for some reason in there, 6-1 for Ben Simmons. I don't know. Yeah, I know. It just caught me off guard.
That's really fascinating.
It'll be interesting. We'll see. All right, last one I got for you. Last time we talked on the podcast, you were still with Action Network. You mentioned that you're about to make a big move. At the time, you couldn't publicly say what it was. And I'm pumped we can finally talk about it, man. How have things been over at The Ringer? You've been killing it. The pod's been great. I've really been enjoying
it. Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I'm really enjoying The Ringer. I mean, I'm having a great time. I'm not writing at The Ringer, but I'm doing podcasts, which is, you know, great. I'm really enjoying it. The you know, Spotify's been excellent. I mean, like, I love it over there. You know, we have we call ourselves East Coast Bias. It's me, JJ, and House. Obviously, JJ's in New York. I'm in Philly, and House is in DC. So we're the East Coast Bias, and we do the Ringer gambling podcast. Right now, we're doing it a couple of days a week for the NBA Finals, but we're going to pick up and we're going to be doing a lot of different things. Hopefully, I get a chance to, you know, work with Warren Sharp once football season starts. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even through the summer, you know, we may have some different things going on with some boxing events. But right now, it's the NBA Finals. So I'm just getting into a groove with it. It's kind of a weird time with me coming on board towards the end of the season, but I mean, I'm excited regardless. So.
This is just like me being like nerdy about like podcasts and like journalism and stuff like that. But do you get like much behind the scenes, you know, feedback, coaching with The Ringer, that kind of thing? I think I just feel like they have some really smart people up there.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You know, Bill actually just texted me yesterday telling me some stuff that I can, you know, work on and everything like that. So it's been great.
That's awesome, dude. I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for The Ringer because I think they got a good one, man. I'm just really happy for everything. Ra, where can listeners find you? You know the deal. Plug away anything you want.
I mean, you can find me at I Am Rostradamus on Twitter. That's Rostradamus instead of Nostradamus. My name's Raheem. So, I mean, but you can find me if you know, go on Spotify, download The Ringer Gambling Podcast. I'm on there a couple times a week. And, you know, we got some other stuff in the works, too, as far as other podcast ideas. You know, Bill just hit me today with something. So we'll see how that plays out. But I'm going to be exclusively on Spotify. So you on Spotify or, you know, any of your podcasts, anywhere you download podcasts, whether it's Apple, whether it's Google. I mean, I prefer Spotify because, you know, that's the company that I rep. So you should download the Spotify app. But if you can find podcasts, download The Ringer Gambling Podcast. I'm on there with JJ and House 3-4 days a week. So
killing it. Just killing it, my man. Raheem Palmer, Ringer Spotify, Ringer Gambling Pod, first ballot RNG Hall of Famers, I always say. And, you know, so it's up to House for us, my man. Thanks as always, Rob.
Thanks. You have a good one. I appreciate it.
Joining me now to talk a little Belmont Stakes, a little golf, Bill Spiros, bookies.com and the Boston Herald. How you doing, Bill?
I am doing better than Bruce Cassidy.
Who is Bruce Cassidy?
He was the Bruins coach who was fired last night.
Oh, you can tell how much attention I pay to hockey. That's why we never talk about hockey on the pod here. Well, I'm glad that you're doing better than him. Also glad to see that you're in the comfort of your home now, I take it.
Yes, we are in the we're in the shrine where I have all my memorabilia up on the wall.
Nice.
It also triples as both my office and eventually my mausoleum. My wife's just going to leave me on my chair and mummify me after I pass on to the next life.
Very good.
Dog stuffed next to me, and we're going to walk together across the Rainbow Bridge.
Okay.
So this room serves three purposes.
All right.
Shrine, office, and mausoleum.
Okay. I mentioned it just because last time we did an interview with you, you were in the middle of nowhere in Georgia.
Yeah, I was in Georgia. I was in South Mayberry or East Petticoat Junction. And I was in the parking lot of a BP station.
That is true. That part is
back then gas was only $80 a gallon.
Okay, let's talk Belmont Stakes, Bill. I always get more than I bargain for with you, my man. Race is this Saturday. Last I checked, this morning, Tuesday morning. Well, actually, no. I have the numbers after the draw. After the draw, you help me out with this. Rich Strike, big change from 80-1 ahead of that crazy Derby win. He's 7-2. Seven to two. You got We the People 2-1, and the favorite Mo Donegal 5. No, you know, Bill, I'm screwing this up. Give me the top three. Who are the top three and what are they?
Well, We the People drew the rail. So they installed them at 2-1. And then
We the People's the favorite.
Yeah, Mo Donegal's at 5-2 out of the six.
But, and then Rich Strike, you know, at 7-2, right?
Yeah, those prices are going to move a lot this week, I think. You know, we only have 8 horses in this race, which, you know, for Belmont, you usually see the field winnow quite a bit. And I mean, I see only 4 that have a legitimate shot. And Mo Donegal, Creative Minister, Rich Strike, and We the People. So you're going to see those horses priced probably anywhere between 5-2 or 2.5-1 to maybe 5-1. And, you know, the science will be to try to work perhaps the best perfectas and trifectas, because, you know, I think there'll be a decent price. I think you'll get a good price on some of these if you're looking beyond just simple win, place, and show money. It's going to be an open field. I think the pace is going to be crazily slow, almost like the inverse of the Derby, where you had this crazy record half mile insanity, where it's almost like Rich Strike's owners, like if they could have like done the race on video or CGI, it's exactly how they would have done it, because everybody else was gassed. And he just strolled and was pulling away. The Belmont's 1.5 miles, and it's also 1.5 miles after not all of these horses, but some have run in the other derbies, the other Triple Crown races. So it is really about stamina and patience. And we saw that with Rich Strike in the Derby. I don't think anybody really had time to think about him, because he didn't enter the race until Friday of that week. So, you know, maybe if he had been there for a week, you know, some of the real sharps and some of the real insiders might have looked at him a little bit more than they did. There aren't going to be any surprises on Saturday in that sense. And I don't think you're really going to have any surprise. I don't think you're going to have surprises with the rest of this field. I think any of those 4, you could make the case for any of them. I was looking this morning. I am sort of I'm really torn between Creative Minister and Rich Strike. I like those 2 a lot. And Mo Donegal would be my 3rd play. And a trifecta, but I wanted to put him on the top only because I'd be looking for a better price. And I would think in this race, I mean, if you can handicap this, God bless you. If you can really handicap this one, I think the rail is overpriced in 1.5 mile race. I mean, Belmont is a grueling, grueling course. I don't know what the weather's going to be, but I mean, it's always humid in New York in June. So it is going to be a tough slog for these horses, especially the ones that have been running, you know, 2 and 3 races leading up to this. It's not just, of course, it's not just the, you know, the Triple Crown races. You have other races that, other horses have run that, have led up to this from the, you know, from a stakes race perspective. So, you know, it's it'll be interesting. Of course, we don't have the Preakness winner, early voting. He's not running in this race, much like the Derby winner, Rich Strike, didn't run in the Preakness. So this is, I guess, a negative Triple Crown, sort of like a, you know, I don't know how you would describe it, where you have the winner of the Derby skipping the Preakness and the winner of the Preakness skipping the Belmont.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the trifecta you suggested. Anything else you'd throw out there? It sounds like that's kind of it or bust for you, at least at this point.
Yeah. You know, I did this before the Derby and the Preakness, and I went back and I charted the last 30 Belmonts with a formula of betting 100 across the board on the favorite. And if you had done that in the last 30 Belmonts, and I mean, in the last 30 Derbies and the last 30 Preakness races, you would have won money. If you did that in the last 30 Belmonts, you would have lost. We're on a streak where the favorites won the last 2 Belmonts and 3 out of the last 4. But those odds have been prohibitive. I mean, essential quality was 130 to one. Tis the law was 85 to 4 to 5. I mean, he wasn't even money. So in an 8-horse field, you're probably going to have a low money, high priced finisher and the win in the show and the place in the show money. So you're not going to get that kind of payoff you might have gotten in the Derby where, you know, the favorite didn't win, but you still got, I think, 1380 on the place and show tickets because, you know, the winner paid 80 to one. So yeah. You don't have that here. You don't have that dynamic. So I think of this for a betting strategy here, there's really no value or security in just placing money across the board on the favorite like you might have done elsewhere. The return is minimal given the risk and given the balance in this field. So I think you really need to look at it if you want to bet this race. You know, try to look at some trifectas. Try to look at some, you know, maybe some of these perfectas might give you like maybe 12 to 15 to one. You could box, oh, maybe the three out of those four sort of quad favorites, if you will. You know, maybe you can box three of those in a Quinella box or a perfecta box for like 20 or 30 bucks. You might get a decent return on that.
I might bet Rich Strike just because it'll be fun to root for him.
It's 7-2 price is going to move. I think it's going to move significantly. And there was a record amount of money bet on the Derby this year online, combined with the money at Churchill Downs. The pool was an all-time record pool. So I think you might see that on Sunday. We don't have a Triple Crown at stake, but you have more. There's never been more access to online horse racing betting as there is right now. You know, its online presence has grown in tandem with sports betting. So there'll be a lot of people who will probably want to bet on Rich Strike because they just love the story. They love the Sonny Leone story. They love the owner's story. You know, they love the fact that the horse was like Khabib going over the rope after he beat Conor McGregor and sort of beating up everybody and say that horse was like beating up everybody after the race. I mean, that's kind of what you look for in a horse. It's not only one that wins, but Bill, one that's looking for a fight after the race.
And people are mad because they missed out on him last time. I watched the Derby at a casino in Maryland, MGM, and I was sitting next to a guy who was from Venezuela, as is Sonny Leone, the jockey on Rich Strike. The whole time he's talking up Rich Strike as the race is going, and Rich Strike makes his move and ends up winning. This guy, he's going nuts. I mean, he's the nicest guy in the world. He's so happy. Yes, yes, yes. I'm so happy Rich Strike won. The jockey's my countryman. The jockey's my countryman. That's what he kept saying. I said, amazing. How much did you bet on him? He goes, oh, I didn't bet. He was 80 to one. And I think a lot of people feel like that. They're like, man, I missed out. Screw it. I don't care that I'm getting way worse odds. I'm betting on that horse again, just because it's going to be fun.
Well, that's gambling in a nutshell.
There you go.
The bets you make are the ones you shouldn't have made, and the bets you don't make are the ones that you should have made.
Let's talk a little golf. You've had a couple of really good golf columns this week, Bill. First, this was crazy. All these guys have announced they're leaving the PGA Tour and they're joining LIV Golf, the Saudi-funded tour. Phil's playing there now, DJ playing over there now, and you wrote that both Johnson and Lefty will make more just from joining this tour than Tiger Woods has earned playing golf over the course of his entire PGA Tour career. How is that even possible?
My head exploded when I realized that. And so the dog went crazy. I mean, he was eating pieces all over the place, but I had to put it back together and grab, you know, my frontal lobe out of his mouth. Uh-huh. Give me my frontal lobe. Uh-huh. So it's nuts.
What are the numbers? 200 mil for Phil and 125 for Johnson. Tiger had what? 120 or
earnings, yeah, 120, you know, roughly almost 121.
Yeah.
And the fellow who reported the number on Phil, the 200 million on Phil, I used to work with him at Golf Week. So I trust his reporting on that, and the 125 on DJ has been widely reported and no one's refuted that. So I think those numbers are legit in terms of what they are. Tiger's, you know, the PGA Tour earnings update every week after each event. I updated those for 3 years when I was at Golf Week USA Today. Every Monday, I would update the all-time money list. So that's kind of where I got that idea, frankly, because when I saw the 125 million, I had done the money list at USA Today Golf Week for 3 years. That would be one of my things I do, is update it after each tournament. And I remembered it. I'm thinking, wait a second, Tiger was at like 120, 121? And I went back and I looked and my eyes popped out of my head. I said, oh my God, DJ is going to get more than Tiger has made. He's just going to get the same amount of money for signing on the dotted line. And then you realize Tiger's been a pro for 26 years come August.
Yeah.
And everything he's been through, physical, the back surgeries, I lost count at 7. He's probably had at least a dozen other procedures. Obviously, his infamous Black Friday deal with the fire hydrant and his ex-wife throwing the golf club through the back of the Escalade. He went through that public humiliation. And then his near-death experience in California, and what it's taken for him just to come back to walk, never mind play competitive golf. And to think that DJ, especially DJ, gets more money just for signing with this tour, it's insane. But it's also, to me, a very troubling sign for the PGA. I mean, DJ quit the PGA Tour today. Kevin Na quit the PGA Tour on Saturday. He left, he's 51, so technically he's too old to be on the PGA Tour anyway. But I think some of it, or a lot of it, or maybe 99% of it is money. But I think there's a part of it where these golfers, and Phil started this last, you know, in January, and he took a lot of guff for it. And, you know, but still his point stands in terms of, you know, these guys are being treated as if they're players, like baseball players. You know, baseball players have a collective bargaining agreement. The NFL is a collective bargaining agreement. These PGA Tour players are independent contractors. They get paid 1099s. They're not employees. They don't have a medical coverage. They don't have a union. They don't have anything. So the PGA Tour sort of treats them as if they're, you know, full-time employees, but, you know, they're not full-time employees. I mean, they have to qualify every year just to play.
I didn't realize too. Exemption. I didn't realize also, Bill, I thought leaving the PGA Tour meant you weren't going to be able to play the majors and stuff too, but it sounds like all these guys will still be able to play the majors.
Well, they have exemptions.
Yeah.
Phil, I'm not sure. I looked up DJ's exemptions because, you know, he just this morning, I rewrote that story, and he's exempted for another 4 years for the Open Championship and the PGA Championship by virtue of his Masters win. And of course, he has a lifetime Masters exemption. And then he got a 10-year U.S. Open exemption from winning it in 2016. So basically, he's going to be able to play in all the majors based on those exemptions through 2026. And I would hope by then they figured this out.
Normally, this is where I'd say, okay, well, Bill, who do you like for, you know, the LIV golf event in London this weekend? However, you had another column I really liked this week. Looks like books, at least legal books, in the U.S. are kind of split on whether they're even going to take bets on this at this point.
Yeah. Our good friends at the Westgate Superbook in Vegas, Jeff Sherman Golf Odds, you know, they put up odds last night on this event. Monday and they're night. Taking action, but only in Nevada on it. So I was scouring the interwebs right before I joined you. I was laboring away in the mausoleum office shrine to see if any online books had posted odds yet. And I have not seen them. I was told on background that at least one major book has been approved in 3 states. And I've looked at other books in those states, and I have not seen anything as of yet online for any US-based sports books. That doesn't mean they're not there. I just haven't seen them, and I have reached out to everyone asking. So in terms of odds about who do you like, obviously DJ is the prohibitive favorite. I mean, he's 5-1 according to the Superbook, and Taylor Gooch is 9-1. Oosthuizen's 10-1. Lefty's 30-1. You have to remember these are only 54 hole events.
Yeah.
There's only 54 holes. There are no tee times and there are no cuts.
Small field too, right?
Huh?
Small field too, right?
Yeah. 48 golfers. There's individual and team competitions. There's 4 12 man teams. These are just individual odds. They didn't have the teams formatted until today. So they're doing both, you know, low score wins on the individual side, and then they're doing team totals, and then the top teams are going to play in Miami after the other events are done in October.
Why do you think it is that, you know, these books offer bets on so many different sports? Why aren't they offering it on this right out of the gate?
Yeah, well, obviously none of them have given me an answer, but my spidey sense, this is speculative, but I would call it informed speculation, is that they all have partnerships with the PGA Tour, and I don't think they want to risk it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, that speculation, but makes sense.
Yeah, that is pure speculation. I'm not reporting that as fact, but, you know, I'm just trying to figure out why. And they're pretty close-lipped when I ask them why about anything. I get a lot of information. I don't get a lot of explanation. So if there is a hesitancy or no odds at all, my thoughts would be that it's just they don't want to alienate or upset the PGA Tour. No one's told me they're prohibited from doing it. So I think it's much more a call either way, whether or not they're going to. I think they're putting up, there would be more interest, in my opinion, in betting this event than the RBC Canadian Open. I think they would do well betting wise, especially with Phil in the field. You know, maybe you bet him to finish last. I don't know. But if there is an issue, and of course, regulatory approval is the other concern, and some, you know, for the same reason why a lot of states eventually got around to banning betting on events in Russia, you know, but that happened only after the sports books came out publicly and told me they weren't going to do it. And then the states, a lot of them, you know, addended their regulations to say, we're not allowing, you know, you to take any action on a Russian events, but they had already stopped doing that. So I don't know if some of that's at play among the regulators here. I mean, I don't want to get into politics, but I think that part of it may be a reason why some states might be hesitant in allowing the sports books to take action on it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It makes sense. I get the theory. Bill, I want to let you get back to whatever you're doing in your office/mausoleum there. Where can listeners find you, man? Plug away.
Okay. I'm on Twitter at Bill Spiros, and my stuff is at Bookies, and of course the Boston Herald is Boston Herald. You can find that pretty easily. I'm gonna have a column in Thursday's Herald. I was gonna write about the Bruins coach for tomorrow, but I got pushed back a day. And since you've never heard of him, probably won't be much of a column. People in Boston are very pissed about that, by the way, just as an aside.
I was going to say, I think Herald readers are going to have a lot more to say about that.
Yeah, well, they're pissed because they rightly see the issues with that team are in the front office and not with the coach. And, you know, he was a Bruins guy for 15 years in the organization. And I think the fans liked him because he spoke bluntly, you know, sort of like if Belichick was a hostile hockey player, you would have got some Cassidy out of him, where, you know, he doesn't sugarcoat anything, which I think the fans found refreshing. A lot of the players did not find it refreshing, and I think that was part of that.
So is that still going to be what you write about, or are you gonna switch off to something else?
Well, I don't know. Since I was pushed back a day, we'll see where things stand. You know, the US Open is coming to Brookline next week. Tiger's not going to be there. And I think with this calamity that's happening with golf, I mean, just think, golf, you know, this isn't like, you know, think of the NFL on like March 15th when Adam Schefter is tweeting like 80,000 signings in 20 minutes. Like, you never have a day like that in golf. Like, there's never golf news.
Yeah.
But in the last 24 hours in golf, we had Phil Mickelson basically saying screw you to the PGA Tour. Dustin Johnson literally saying screw you to the PGA Tour. Tiger Woods saying, I'm not playing in the US Open. So I'm probably in about as bad shape as you think I'm going to be. And this entire issue with this tour starting in London on Thursday. So you normally don't get a whole lot of golf news, but we've got plenty of golf news this week.
You're not kidding, man. I'm leaning towards leading the pod with it next week in between this first live event and the US Open. A lot going on. Bill Spiros, bookies.com, Boston Herald. Awesome stuff. As always, my man, good luck betting the ponies this weekend. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
There it is, ladies and gents. We'll be back next Wednesday, as we always are. Otherwise, thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing, IG at Rambling and Gambling, email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Everybody, have a great week.